And Ms. Winslow, I'm going to violate all the rules we ought to have, and I'm going to start out by asking you a question before you even tell us who you are. Aren't you really here trying to get specific enforcement of this modified or amended agreement? Isn't that what this appeal is about?
In a nutshell, yes.
But then we run into the problem that it's executory, that it was not completed. The government withdrew, your client accepted, but the government said no.
Well, Judge, I think the problem with applying that rule in this case is this is an instance in which the defendant was a cooperating witness. Prior to even her arrest in this matter, she became a cooperating witness, and she continued to cooperate with the government throughout this case, after her first plea was initiated, and throughout the negotiations in this case. The cases from this court, really from the Eighth Circuit that I've cited in my brief, state that where there is pre-plea conduct anticipated on the part of the defendant, then the fact that you don't have the plea colloquy is not the relevant consideration.
But she had the plea colloquy. She had the plea agreement. What did she give up to get this modified agreement? What else did she do that she hadn't already agreed to do?
I'm not sure it was a matter of what else. It was the continuation of the cooperation and the
But she was obligated to continue her cooperation under the agreement that's of record.
She was obligated to continue her cooperation.
What did the government get for this modified agreement? It sounds like that they were doing your client a favor to sort of make up for her inability to get the safety valve.
Well, can I go back a little bit in the facts, Judge, and see if I can address that? I'd like to answer your question. I'm not sure it's that easily answered. When the parties initially entered into the plea agreement in this case, there was some question about whether or not Ms. Sakalarian, and you got it right, by the way, Judge, would qualify for application of the safety valve. There was this battery conviction that was out there. Ms. Sakalarian herself did not remember pleading guilty to the actual battery charge, and under the recent changes in the guidelines, that made a difference. If she had actually not said the words guilty, not pleaded guilty, then it would have been a type of provisional sentence in which the application of the safety valve would have applied to her. After a lengthy period of time in which the government was willing to concede that if this transcript of the plea colloquy in that case did not say the word guilty, if she didn't admit her guilt, the safety valve would apply. During all of this period of time, the government was willing to admit that, you know, if it doesn't apply, we're fine with that, and she can receive a 43-month sentence, the sentence, by the way, that was contemplated at the time of the original plea agreement. As it turned out, and the government and I disagree on how this transcript reads, but it was the government's position, and the district court agreed that she did plead guilty to the battery, and therefore the safety valve would not apply. Following that, the government agreed to renegotiate that portion of the plea agreement. So really all of this, it's our position, was incorporated into the initial negotiation of the plea agreement.
What does the government get for renegotiating that?
Well, the both parties get the benefit of the deal that they negotiated. I mean, I don't think it was, and perhaps they'll disagree,
but... the deal they negotiated, well, and you had the deal that Ms. Galarian negotiated, or that you negotiated for her.
Right, but I believe that it wasn't the government's interest to give her a lengthier sentence than the one they thought it was entitled to either.
Nothing in that the plea agreement of record reflects the safety valve, an agreement that the safety valve will apply.
That is correct. There was an agree to disagree as to whether it would apply. Following the interpretation or the court's interpretation of what that transcript said, the government agreed that, in fairness, they would reconsider and renegotiate that particular portion of the plea agreement and redraft the plea agreement in this amendment such that she would get the benefit of the safety valve. That was an agreement between the parties. I went to the United States Attorney's Office. I sat down with Mr. Kubiatowski and his supervisors, and an agreement was made that was the appropriate resolution of this case. That didn't change until the day in which Ms. Sakalarian was intended to enter this amended plea agreement. On that morning, at that time, the prosecutor and pretrial services came to court and said there's been a positive drug test, and that's what gets us to the issue of good faith and the party's discretion in negotiating plea agreements.
Now, our ability to look at the government's conduct is pretty. It's a pretty small window, isn't it? We can only review their executive conduct if it's alleged to have violated a constitutional right, like some invidious discrimination, that this was done because Ms. Kalarian was female or whatever her race is and so forth, or some similar constitutional violation. Aren't we limited to that kind of review?
Pardon me, Judge. I don't think you are. I think Santabello and the other cases which impose the duty of good faith on the government in their execution of their obligations under a plea agreement and also in the enforcement of a plea agreement, I think those cases give this court the right to review the government's good faith or bad faith in the execution of their obligations under a plea agreement.
Let me come at this from a slightly different angle, if I could, Ms. Wilson.
Ms. Winslow.
This was an 11C1C agreement.
Right. It was, Your Honor.
Which I guess I tend to view as a triangular agreement among the government, the defense, and the court.
That's correct.
And the court accepted the original plea agreement, but never even got around to a modification of that agreement.
May I address that for a moment?
Please. Mm-hmm.
I would argue, or I think the record shows, that Judge Bucklow did have the opportunity to address the enforcement of it. It was, in fact, Judge Bucklow who sent us back to the negotiating table. When she decided that the safety valve would not apply in this case, Judge Bucklow said, why don't you go back and renegotiate it? And the two of us agreed.
Okay. But then I guess in every case that I can imagine for a cooperating witness, a positive drug test would be a pretty big deal in terms of
and three might even be bigger.
I understand you're disputing the accuracy of the results, but you can imagine if you were cross-examining a cooperating witness who had three positive drug tests and an explanation, how much fun you would have with that at trial and how useful that witness would be for the government, right?
You're absolutely right, Your Honor. But the facts of this case show that Ms. Sakalarian did not use drugs. The first positive drug test, which was many months prior to the sentencing, prior to the issues that we're discussing now, she admits not using drugs but being in an environment in which she could test positive for marijuana. That was not an issue that was discussed further in the case. In other words, she was around people who were smoking marijuana. Just out there. The second and third subsequent tests, Ms. Sakalarian has studiously, continuously denied any drug use to the extent that on her own volition and by her spending her own money, she went and had a hair test sample. We discussed that quite a bit on the record, but very little in the briefs.
And that's as to the second test.
That is to the second positive, not the...
She offered to get a hair test for the third to rebut the third test, but did not do that, right?
She actually did, but it was after this appeal was filed, Judge. So
it's not part of the record.
It's not part of the record, and I won't address it for that reason. She got the hair test. A hair test goes back approximately 90 days as opposed to the potentially 30 days that the urine tests employed by pretrial services would cover. That test was negative for all substances. The government in no way attempted to impeach those test results. We offered to subpoena the individuals who did the hair test. We offered to allow them to be interviewed, obviously by their own willingness. We offered all kinds of access so that they could examine the reliability of this test. At no time did the government take us up on that and just simply submitted, as we state in the briefs, that this is how pretrial services has always tested for drugs.
So they relied on the standard procedure that pretrial services and probation has used for years and years and years.
That's correct, Judge.
So you want us to determine that was not in good faith to do that?
I do, and I'd like to...
And through what lens are we looking? Are we looking through the due process lens or what?
It would be due process, Judge. I know I'm running out of time, but very specific.
I'm going to give you three more minutes in rebuttal, so finish out.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. The fact is, in this case, the government has submitted repeatedly in factual statements that we knew that this lab was reliable, the lab that does the sample collection, and then the sample is later sent on for testing. They did not know the lab was reliable. They didn't know anything about this lab because, in fact, when the government and I sat down with representatives of the pretrial services office, They stated to us, these labs are under a contract with probation. We can't tell you when their last audit was. We can't tell you when their last employee training was. What we can tell you is that under our contract, each one of these employees is required to go through a PowerPoint presentation for training. And I submit to you that if it is a PowerPoint presentation in employee training that stands between Ms. Sakalarian and 17 months in a plea agreement, she has been denied due process.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winslow. Mr. Kubiatowski.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Steve Kubiatowski, representing the United States. The first issue the Court really has to decide in this instance is whether the waiver of appeal in this 11C1C plea agreement is the end of the story, and the government maintains that it is. The government struck a 50% cooperation deal with the defendant, recognizing her historical cooperation and her willingness to continue to cooperate with the government.
But you were working on a modification, an amendment. You had committed to that, but for this drug test?
I disagree with that, Your Honor. The plea agreement makes no mention of the safety valve applicability whatsoever.
True, nor does it have any terms saying how that the agreement would be modified, if at all.
That's correct,
but,
Your Honor.
In fact, you did have discussions and made some representations to Ms. Winslow that what else you would do in a sentence reduction.
The representations were that if there was a question regarding the battery conviction, whether or not that she did in fact enter a battery conviction, which would take her out of the safety valve, we would certainly consider that, because if she qualified for the safety valve, certainly we would adjust the applicable guidelines range.
What was it you pulled out of when you found out about that second drug test? What did you refuse to go along with?
That was a proposed amendment to the plea agreement.
Okay, so
separate and apart, which as you
we consider whether that separate agreement, that modification, can be specifically enforced. Can't we consider that as part of this appeal? As this appeal,
I disagree, Your Honor, because the original plea agreement was upheld, was accepted by the court. We upheld our end of the bargain. The defendant upheld her end of the bargain, though arguably the fact that she committed two additional pretrial violations, testing positive, might be considered a breach of that cooperation agreement. Because as you mentioned, Your Honor, the fact that she has not one, not two, but three drug tests would undermine her credibility as a cooperating witness, in addition to the fact that she denied it all three times vehemently. And the other kicker is one drug test, the first drug test was for marijuana, the second drug test is for opiates, the third drug test is for opiates in the form of morphine. We have three different types of drug tests. Where there's smoke, there's fire, at least as far as the government was concerned. And that's why we decided not to go forward with the proposed amendment. The proposed amendment was, as you suggested, Your Honor, a way of giving the defendant the benefit of the doubt regarding the battery conviction and the safety valve applicability. If you do the math, if she had gotten a safety valve, that proposed amendment would have given her the same sentence.
But for the second drug test bad result, you were going to that sentencing hearing on whatever day it was to go forward with that modification.
That's correct, Your Honor. And as the record indicates, I learned about that second drug test just before that was supposed to go through. And I put on the record the fact that my supervisor, the criminal chief, specifically asked me when we were considering giving an additional benefit whether or not the defendant had any more positive drug tests. And in good faith, I could not proceed with that amendment knowing that our office had concerns about those drug tests and we had just learned about a new one.
At that point, were you anticipating any further assistance from the defendant in terms of live testimony?
No, Your Honor. At that point, the defendant, the co-defendants, had pretty much all been, I believe, all pled out and all had been sentenced.
Was this modification a one-way deal? Did it just benefit the defendant, or would you have gotten something out of it?
We would get nothing out of it, Your Honor. This would be this was a one-way benefit, which was giving the defendant the benefit of the doubt There was nothing regarding that proposed sentencing reduction.
A doubt had already been decided against her, hadn't it, by the district judge?
That's correct, Your Honor.
It was a kindness on your part.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's the way the government looked at it.
He was unpunished, Mr. Kubiatowski.
Well, is there anything wrong with pretrial services insisting upon their own testing protocol across
the
board,
Your Honor,
in all cases?
I believe the record indicates that this same protocol has been in effect since 1995 or 1997, is used by probation and pretrial services. And we were willing to give the defendant the benefit of the doubt to this extent regarding her allegations that these were false positives. Our criminal chief met with pretrial services after the second positive drug test to look more closely into pretrial services procedures for taking these test samples. And Ms. Winslow was with the criminal chief during the course of that meeting. I was not. And our office concluded that those procedures were highly reliable. We don't typically do that following positive drug tests. And then the icing on the cake was just before the last sentencing, we got a third positive. So we believe that this analysis should be bifurcated. The plea agreement was accepted by the court. We upheld our end of the bargain, granting the defendant 50% off the low end of her applicable guideline range, which took her down to 60 months. We considered giving her an additional benefit, but we were not obliged to do so and got nothing in return by considering as such. Given that the defendant had two additional positive tests following our consideration of that agreement, we were acting in good faith in not going forward, as the district court recognized. Unless there are any further questions, I'll yield the remainder of my time to the court.
All right. Thank you. And Ms. Winslow, I promised you three extra minutes. You can have that much if you want.
First, with respect to the issue of the appeal waiver, I think it's well-settled law that if the government does not act in good faith or does not hold up its end of the bargain, then the appeal waiver would not prevent this court from reviewing the appeal. That's briefed in both of our or submitted in both of our briefs, and I'll just rest on that. With respect to the positive drug test, though, Your Honors, the government brings up an interesting point, and that is that we had one positive test for marijuana, which was not at issue in any of these discussions, one positive test for opiates, and I believe it was actually a positive test for opiates and cocaine in the last positive test. And the hair that Ms. Sakalarian had tested negative for all substance use. I believe that when you have three different substances, the nature of the test actually detracts from the reliability. Here you have an individual who is not showing a pattern of drug use.
She had a bunch of negative tests, though, too, didn't she?
She had months of negative tests. This case is very old. Ms. Sakalarian and I have been together a long time. And she had months and months of negative tests, Your Honor. A few months prior to the positive test for opiate, her sister died of a heroin overdose, and I submitted to the district court, and it's in the record, that Ms. Sakalarian was in no place to be using opiates or any other.
Was this the twin sister?
It was not, Dina. It was her older sister, Heather, for what it's worth. Finally, in the May 18th transcript that is submitted as an appendix to the opening brief of the appellants, Mr. Kubiatowski clearly recognizes that an amendment to the plea agreement has been not only discussed but drafted, that he had, in fact, a copy with him that day and submitted that, and the bottom of that page is page 19 of the appendix. He states that you can't commit any additional offenses, otherwise the plea agreement is off. Judge Bucklow at that time stated, well, then you get down to that anyway. So we are back to the point where the government's good faith in its enforcement of the plea offer that it has submitted is relevant consideration for this court. There's no further questions.
This was an appointed case, Ms. Winslow?
It was, Your Honor.
I wanted to express the gratitude of the court for your taking it and representing your client in the highest tradition of the bar. Thank you. And thank you to both counsel and all counsel, and we will take this under